welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features. This one's been out months in the making, I would say. Me and Robbie Walsh is here with me. I'm very happy. One of my favorite people from around the world. And myself have been pretty busy and I'm able to hook up. But he's finally here with his first film, thematical. I'm going to get this right eventually. Second film released in theaters. Ian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here again.
So this is your first film. And I mean, I would argue, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't have a lot of funds to make this film.
No. We had like roughly $800. I mean, so I had about, 500-600 euro at the time.
So that's about 1,200. Well, depends if you're Canadian or U.S.
Well, I was going by U.S. I mean, I don't know the Canadian rate, so.
Yeah, probably over 1,000 in Canadian.
All right. That's still, that's okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. It'll get you a good night.
So. Yeah, shot it in 4 days, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so you use a lot of locations. Most of your locations seem outdoors.
Yeah.
Cheap and easy to get to. Am I going right on this?
Yeah, close. It's like I filmed it in around my local town in Swords, so I knew exactly where I'd be filming it, and I essentially shot the film in order. So I knew if I was starting close to my home and I would just kind of walk, and I knew where my locations would be, so I'd ring actors and tell them where to meet us. At what time and just shoot scenes there and then, you know.
Now, this being your first film, were you nervous?
No, I was okay with it because I'd done 3 or 4 short films before this, but it was my first feature. I knew it was going to be originally planned as like an extended short film of maybe 40 minutes. 35 to 40 minutes, but as we were filming and as we went along, we knew we could get the feature out of it, which is why we filmed an extra scene over an extra day, you know.
So before you started filming, did you walk around the locations and go, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to go there, we're going to go there, or did you just kind of go, okay, I think I know what I want to do, we're going to start here,
and then No, I knew where I was, because it's my hometown. I know the area like the back of my hand. So I knew exactly what I wanted, and what scenes I wanted. The film itself, it would be much like Split. It was constructed improv.
Okay.
So I would sit down with the actors and I would say, look, here's what's happening with Adam in this scene. So we need you to get from A to C. So when you guys get to B, and that's the peak of the mountaintop, you need to come back down. So just be wary when what way I'm telling you is to go and how these are going. The actors don't really need, the actors I work with don't really need to be told too much because they're really, really good. So they know what they're doing. So, yeah.
Now, I would say this film is lacking a lot of script. Is that, did you have a script in mind? Or you just, like, you just told me you gave them direction, but did they have a script of any kind?
They would have had I call it a blueprint and a guideline as opposed to a script. So I knew the first half of the picture was all about isolation and loneliness, and I wanted to show in the first half of the film, it's almost like two different films. So in the first half of the film, I really wanted to get the point across of how boring and mundane and how a homeless person wakes up and has to just go through nothing, like just sitting around waiting for people to say finish work or go on the lunch break so they can hold the cup out or look to get a few quid or try and get a bit of money together to get a sandwich or something. So I really wanted to get across of the point of, you know, they don't just get up out of bed, they don't just wake up where they wake up and they've stuff to do. If a homeless person or anyone has been homeless would know that if you're out on a street for a long period of time, 99% of of your day is made up of just trying to find something to do and occupy yourself, you know, which is what I really wanted to show in the first half of the film. The second half of the film then was definitely a real case of sitting down with the actors and saying, here's what happens here, this is the second part of his day, and here's how we would interact with this type of person. Does that make sense?
Totally. I think you totally get the isolation throughout the film. I definitely think that carries through. I definitely feel that.
Mm.
Now, you have a dog in the film?
Lily, yeah.
Whose dog?
Was my producer, Phil. Lily's no longer with us. God love her. I used to rent an apartment with my best mate, Phil, who helps produce my films. Phil kind of rehabilitates rescued dogs. And at the time we had Lily. I said, look, I think it'd be a lovely scene if we got Lily to be in the film with Adam. And because she's such a friendly dog and she's a pit bull, you know, because pit bulls have a bit of a bad rep, you know, I knew how well she would behave, especially if she's seen a tennis ball. So, yeah, we just I added that scene in and just to really kind of get across that, you know, pit bulls aren't as bad as people make them out to be. It's all about how you raise them, really, isn't it?
Okay, you're discussing you have a producer and you have a budget of $800.
Yeah.
Now, do you really need a producer for $800? Can't you just pull that out of your pocket and just go, okay, that's what we're going to do?
Well, when I say that, I mean, not really. Because at the time I wasn't working, so Phil would kind of help me out financially. He also helps me out with, when I say logistics, yeah, logistics. I mean, if we needed someone to drive us somewhere, Phil would be the one with the van or the car. Or, you know, if we needed someone to meet up with us to get us a bit of food or something, Phil would come down and we'd have the food with us. Or if we needed a puppy for the scene, Phil got us a puppy, which was Lily, sorry, a dog, you know.
So he sounds like more like a best boy than a producer.
Well, I call him a producer. He's my best mate, you know.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Now, you have a shot in an alley. Did you have a certain... You must have more than one alley, being an old city you live in. Why this alley?
The alleyway where I filmed?
Yes.
Well, that's an area in Swords. Like, where I live in Swords is an old kind of... it used to be kind of a bit of a medieval town. And the area where I filmed is right beside a lake. And there's been a lot of graffiti there, a lot of street drinking there, I think would be a way to describe it. And there'll be a lot of delinquency. And it was sort of a lovely area of the town that had kind of fell into a little bit of, just kind of fell apart, really. And I just wanted to kind of show that area of it, as well as the lovely kind of picturesque parks that we have, you know. Just to kind of show that there's two sides to everywhere. Everything's not picture perfect, you know.
Well, I agree. It seemed very chilly when you were filming. What time of year was this?
I think we filmed in February or March.
Oh my God,
it was
crazy.
Very cold. It was very cold, yeah. I mean, I think everyone on set had the flu. Like, 3 days after we filmed, we got a huge, heavy snowstorm. And I remember thinking to myself, I didn't know whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, because everywhere looked really beautiful with all the snow, and I would have loved to film in the snow. But at the same time, I don't think I would have been able to, because, you know, getting people out and getting camera crew down to walk around in the snow, I don't think for €600 would have happened.
So, you know? Do you pay any of your actors anything for this, or is all just, can you do me a favor?
No, we pay. I mean, what I have. I'd say this is how much we can give you for the day. If you tour for half a day, we can pay you this much money. If that's okay. If you agree to it, yeah. I mean, if the film went on to make $1 million, I'd give them some more money. But the film's not doing that. I mean, if we make, you know, $3 or $4 a month from Amazon, we're doing well. Do you know what I mean?
Fair enough. There's a lot of competition out there. You got to stand out.
Yeah.
As you're filming this, is this, I mean, I was wondering if this was taken from real life. Your main act protagonist gets into a fight with a guy over philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this an everyday occurrence for you, or is this something you just wrote for the film, or is this something you saw happen?
No, I just, during that scene, that was Chris Newman and Johnny Elliott. Johnny, of course, being the lead. And I knew I wanted Chris playing a posh, well-off kid to kind of throw abuse at the homeless guy, which I've seen firsthand, because homelessness is a horrible issue in Dublin at the moment, you know. But back when I made Eden, I'd witnessed this when I was on a night out one night. Very privileged fella emptying a drink over a homeless guy. And I remember explaining this to the actors what I was kind of looking for. And Johnny and Chris, of course, went away, discussed the scene, and came back. And Johnny himself, he improvised that entire scene. So that was all Johnny Elliott. And Johnny's very kind of a philosophical man. So if you sit and talk to him, he will happily sit down and discuss politics all day with you, you know. But that was entirely Johnny and Chris. I just told him I wanted a posh guy, or well-off guy, to really kind of speak down to the homeless guy, and the homeless guy to retort near the end of the scene. And the two guys, straight off the bat, went for it, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you. Then you move to a scene with a different kind of nightlife person.
With
The girl of the streets, okay? I didn't know what we're classifying her as. That's fine. And then they start having a conversation, which, again, is very different than the other people he meets.
Yeah, I mean, it's about people meeting each other on a level. And how kind of you get what you give. So when Sarah Carroll, who's my favourite Irish actress, when she begins talking to John, or Adam, in the film, again, it's been a long time since I've made the film, I remember distinctly saying, I knew that he was going to come back and meet her. So I wanted her to sort of be a caring type character, but it was sort of had a hard shell that we were going to revisit when we came back. And that was Sarah's scene. So yeah, she comes across nice at first, but you know, she's hanging around an area and she's essentially about to sell herself to make some money. Again, what I was trying to come across with this film was when I made this film in 2012. And when I made it, I said, people are saying to me, this is not what homelessness is, Robbie. And I said, no, but this is what it's getting to. Because what everybody associates homelessness with, only 7 years ago, was, oh, he must be an alcoholic, or, oh, they must be a drug addict, oh, you know, they must be a criminal. That's why they're homeless, and that's why they're on the street, and that's why they're a problem, they're mentally ill. Now where we are in Ireland is that people who are homeless and are being made homeless are just people that can't afford rent, that can't afford their mortgage. So, I mean, if you go online and you look at some of the evictions that's happened in Ireland over the last year, it'll shock you to your core. And people who are homeless now, you walk up Grafton Street or up O'Connell Street, or Henry Street in Dublin, which are huge main thoroughfares for shopping. You walk up there at night, every single doorway has somebody in it with a sleeping bag. And if you speak to these people, they're just average people. They have a job, but they can't afford rent because they're getting €12 an hour, and rent is €2,500 a month. You know? And this is where I was coming across with that, especially that scene, because as we come and revisit that character, of Sarah Carroll's character, you find out that she was once well off. And this is what she's resorted to try and make ends meet to help raise her kid, you know? I hope that answered the question. It was a bit long-winded.
No, it was perfect. Absolutely answered my question. The bum eventually gives her his money. You know, he seems like a very helpful person. I was kind of thinking, doesn't he need this more than anybody else in this film?
Yeah, but again, I wanted to kind of try and break down stereotypes. I mean, in the film, like, you see what happens to the character, the girl, we just call her what she was. She was a prostitute. We see what happens to her leading up to when Adam walks away without giving too much away. And then when we do revisit the character, she's upset and she explains what's after happening to him, and all she wants to do is go and see her little kid. So, you know, Adam has been, after making a few quid, he reckons he'll go and make a few more quid, or a bit more money, by doing what he does, hustling, so to speak. And then he decides to try and help this woman out. And he gives her what money he's earned during the day to take her kid, you know, for something to eat.
Yeah, I understand that. But I was just thinking maybe in his situation, he should be a little more selfish, I guess.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't.
I know. I can't. I understand why he did it. I just can't agree with him.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it was me trying to see the good in people.
Maybe. I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah.
Now, when you take a film like this on the road, I mean, I would say it's very culturally appropriate accents. Do people understand them? Like, understand the film? I mean, I get used to it because I hear it a lot because I watch a lot of film, but some people may not. I guess that's what I'm asking you. Do you have that problem when you take the film out?
I did. I'm not going to lie, I did have that problem when I first started trying to shop around. Now, I had to do some reshoots on the film in 2014.
Hold on, 2 years later?
Yeah. Because I had some problems with some of the footage. But what I found was when I was forced shopping the film around and getting it to festivals or trying to sit down and show it to people, they would always comment on the accents, that they couldn't really understand people. But now I find that, and this is going to sound strange, with the help of like Game of Thrones, Downton Abbey, a lot of these huge, big, massive TV shows that have become so accessible to the world, people are more open to understanding accents, Irish accents, English accents, British accents. So I find that the film has become a little bit more accessible now to people, and when people watch it, because they've been glued to a lot of you know, British, European, Irish TV shows, and they've been, you know, with Irish film doing so well lately, I just find people have been more receptive to it and ready to understand it a bit more, you know.
So
I did have that problem.
Okay, I want to get back to... Okay, we'll finish here, and then we'll go back to what I want to discuss. So you think Game of Thrones and Downton Abbey has helped your film? Is that what I took from that?
I don't think it's helped Robbie Walsh's film.
Okay.
I think it's helped, you know, Irish films and English films a little bit, you know? I mean, like when Snatch came out, I remember watching Snatch in Los Angeles, showing it to a friend of mine in Los Angeles in 2008, I think, and he couldn't understand a word of it, you know? And then a few years later, 7 years later, after the huge boom of streaming platforms and online platforms, people are watching more and more, you know, UK-based content, which opens up the whole realm of accents. So now when you go to, say, America and you talk a bit more, you know, they tend to understand you a little bit better because they go, oh, I watched this movie, this English movie, or I watched this Irish movie, or this Irish TV show, or this English TV show, you know. Okay. Whereas before you'd be told, we can't watch that or we can't do that because the accents, no one understands us.
Okay, so 2 years later you've come back to reshoot, you told me. Did you still know all these people?
Oh yeah, yeah. I still a lot of them would be Ireland Split, you know.
I honestly can't remember, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot of them would have been in Split, and some would be in my new one that I've just shot there recently, The Letters. And there'd be some of them out of the movie would be in some of my short films. So I tend to kind of always go back to the same actors that I use.
Okay, let's continue. Your film is complete. You have it shot. 2 years later, you've reshot stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you distribute a film when nobody knows who you are? We don't have Amazon yet, really.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have, I'd say, an explosion of indie film that we've seen in the last 3-4 years.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I ask really nicely. You know, when the reshoot was actually, the reshoot we actually done was actually with the posh guy, Chris Newman. So I knew Chris because I'd done a TV show with Chris, and I'd worked with him on something else. I can't remember what it was, but I know we'd worked together a couple of times. And I just asked him to recreate that scene, and I'd filmed him. And then, yeah, that was it. I just reshot that one scene. I didn't get Johnny Elliott in. I just sat in and done his lines for him. We filmed Chris and Victoria Mulhall playing the posh boy and posh girl, you know?
I do. So, okay, we still haven't answered my question. How did you get your film out there?
Oh, how do I get it out there? After Split went into cinemas, that was my second feature.
Yes,
that was me banging on doors, ringing every cinema chain, video on demand chain, TV station, you name it. I mean, I must have sent out a couple of thousand emails. When I got that into cinemas, the good people at Odeon said to me, "Do you have anything else?" And I said, "Well, actually, I have this other feature film. I'd really like to do something for homelessness with it. Is there any chance you could have a look at it and see if there's anything you can do for one of the charities or something?" And Odeon Cinemas looked at it, really liked it, and said, "Yeah, we would love to do something. Do you know if a charity will do something with you?" So I reached out to a charity called the Dublin Simon Communities, and they do a lot of work for homelessness. So we got it into cinemas, and any money we made from it went to the Dublin Simon Communities. So that was a big help in getting it into the cinema and getting it out there, you know?
So do you feel after you've made two films, you're on your third film, I think now, if I'm correct, maybe fourth, do people know the name Robbie Walsh in your area?
I don't know. I mean, if they do, they don't tell me. If you know the films, you know, they don't tell me. They keep it to themselves. So, I don't know. I mean, I just go, well, I don't think about that. I'm just trying to go out and make the films and get them out there as much as I can.
Oh, I understand that. I'm just saying, maybe it'll help your producer credit and get some more cash. You know, bigger film, bigger budget, more distribution.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can only try. I mean, I inundate you guys with the Twitter message going, "Hey, can you cover me films and have a look?" Because the more you get them out there, the more people will watch. Getting coverage on them is a nightmare. Because like that, you're dealing with so much content now. I mean, even trying to get them up on streaming platforms is really difficult, you know? I mean, to grow your name, I'd love to know how to do that more. I mean, aside from asking people to cover your films, dropping emails, giving them the film to watch for free, I don't really know what else to do, you know, except just keep banging on doors. Hopefully something takes off.
I think that's the only thing you can do. It's like being a podcast, right? Same kind of thing. I can't make you listen to my show.
Yeah.
I have to get out there and do all the promotion myself. I have to go get all my interviews scheduled. Nobody does any work for me.
Mm-hmm.
I do it all myself.
Yeah, that's what I do. I mean, a lot of it's strange because I know people who haven't done as much work would have teams of people behind them helping them get this stuff done. And how they manage to do that is beyond me. I don't know how they do it. I mean, I have an acting agent, but like that, she is just good at acting, getting me acting gigs. But I don't have an agent for directing or writing. I don't have a publicist or a PR firm or a marketing company behind me. It's literally me, a laptop, and my bus pass. That's it.
I have a laptop. I have a car, so I guess I'm a little bit ahead of you. But that's about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, my car went in the cold weather that time when the snow hit. I forgot to put antifreeze in the engine. Started the car, yeah. And the timing belt, because it was just a block of ice, just cut through the engine. Yeah, that's why I have no car.
Sorry to hear that. So you started filming in 2012, and now it's 2019. What do you say you've learned? What has changed in independent cinema in Ireland for you?
Well, I'm only learning about it now. I think they're open. What's changed drastically is the capability of getting a film made and being able to deliver it where it's able to be shown on screens or on computer screens, you know? So even 8 or 9 years ago, you had to have a reasonably big budget if you weren't calling in favours. So when I made we filmed it on a Panasonic GH2. And we filmed at the time, that was when everybody was using 7Ds, you know. So when I made that, we were sort of just a little bit ahead of the curve with it. So when we were saying we're filming, when Dunica was like, I'm filming on a Panasonic GH2, people were like, oh no, you should film on a 7D. But we got that made, and it was able to kind of hold the test of time, so that it doesn't look as dated. Nowadays, people are able to, the cameras that you're getting on new mobile phones, and the capability of editing it is on your bloody mobile phone. So the technology, I think, has allowed people to be able to make films and deliver them much quicker and much more efficient, financially efficient. Two online streaming sites and two cinemas or two television stations. Already I feel like a dinosaur, you know. I mean, I'm only starting to get my work out there, and I mean, working on my latest film, the two guys who were filming that for me were just way ahead of the, they were ahead of the curve. But then even the kid I met with there recently, who wanted to sit and work with me on the film on something else, he is so far ahead of the curve with what he has that, you know, it's changed. Like the whole filmmaking process, I think, has changed. Technically, has changed dramatically. You still need to have a good script, though.
You've noticed that hasn't changed.
Yeah, you still need good actors, and you still need a good idea. But the being able to make a film now, it's pick up a camera, you know, if you're inspired by the right directors, you can make some pretty good content.
So are you ready for some fun questions?
Yeah, let's go.
So the first one, what made you want to be a director?
Film, lack of acting opportunities, I suppose. And you're getting cast as the drug dealer, tough guy the whole time, and you know, you want something a little bit different. You gotta learn how to write and direct your own stuff. Plus I'm a massive fan of cinema. I mean, I think the film that made me know I could actually go and make a movie was when I watched Shane Meadows or David Lean or Mike Lee for the first time, or Ben Wheatley. When I seen these films, I thought, yeah, maybe I'm ready now. I can really give this a go. And yeah.
The one actor you've always wanted to work with and will one day.
Oh goodness me, that's a tough one. Oh. I don't know. That's just, there's too many. There's too many. Right now, I think if I had a choice to work with anyone, I would love to work with Felicity Jones. I just think that she's brilliant. Up and coming actors or older actors, I mean, I would love to work with Fassbender, maybe. Colin Farrell, even. Colin Farrell's very good. Cate Blanchett, George Clooney, Brad Pitt, I don't know, all of them, everyone. Ryan Gosling, maybe. Ryan Gosling would be another guy I really admire. I think he's been in some very, very brilliant and underrated films over the last 10 years. I just think he's going to really step forward over the next 10 years onto a massive, onto the award scene in a big way.
My last question. If there's one director you could hand your film to and sit down and watch your film with it, which film would it be and which director?
No, at least I'm a big film fan, so I don't want to just throw one name out there and be real kind of stereotypical. Can I pick two?
Yes, if I had a choice
to sit down with anyone to watch my films, if I could get someone to watch Split, it'd be obviously one would be probably Tarantino or Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
I think they'd get it, you know.
I could see Ricky Gervais doing really get it.
Eden, I'd love to sit and get maybe Ben Wheatley's thoughts on the film, or maybe Christopher Nolan. I'll leave the big four out of it. I'll leave Spielberg, Scorsese, Lucas, and Cameron, and the big five, and Coppola out. But yeah, I mean, if I could get someone like. So if I could sit down and go through it with them, that'd be amazing, you know?
Well, knowing you and your computer and your email, I guarantee you would get a response from Ricky Gervais if you sent him a screener and asked him what you thought of your film. I think that's for your next project.
If I had his email, I'd absolutely send it to him. So I'm trying to get Split developed into a TV thing, you know?
So, before you go, where can everybody see Eden? I think it's available on Amazon Prime, but I can't remember.
Yeah, Eden's available on Amazon Prime. UK Film Channel, OP Prime TV, OBBOD, where else? Deutherion, I think that's how you pronounce it, TV. I mean, it's available on a whole bunch of streaming platforms. But the main place you might get it would be Amazon Prime.
Well, Robbie, you know it's always fun to have you on the show. Thank you for coming back.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. That's really cool of you to have me on again.
Have a great night.
You too, sir.
Bye-bye. Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.